Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, everybody. Thanks for coming to tonight's event. This is the Muslim Atheist Debate. And the topic today is, the question is, why it makes sense to believe or disbelieve. So today we have two representatives. For the Muslims, we have Brother Sadat Anwar, and for the atheists, we have Charles Lehman. So for our Muslim panelists, Sadat Anwar, he's born and raised in Toronto. He has a degree in Middle Eastern Studies from the University of Toronto. He's a member of the Muslim Debate Initiative. He is involved in street outreach with Street Da'wah Toronto and maintains a blog on YouTube called That Canadian Brother. For our atheist representative, Charles Lehman, he's a former president of the Atheist Club on campus and has been a cornerstone of the campus atheist community throughout its several incarnations for the last 9 years. Love Campus Atheists is working to create a community for atheists to increase the visibility of atheism as a respectable worldview, to educate, to destigmatize, and to humanize atheists as people who are also exploring what the multi-faith resource team calls questioning of meaning, purpose, belonging, and identity. This is his second event with us. He has taken part last year in a moderated discussion with Abdullah Andalusi last year. So the debate has four parts. So the first part is the introductory, the opening arguments. Each person will get 10 minutes each for a total of 20 minutes. The second part is composed of three supporting arguments for each party. So the first argument will be the first side's supporting argument. It will be for 5 minutes. The second side's rebuttal for 3 minutes. And the first side's counter rebuttal, which is 2 minutes. And this will happen 3 times for each person. And then we move on to the last part of the debate, which is the closing arguments. Each person will get to make a closing statement or a conclusion for 8 minutes each. And then finally, we move on to the open question period until the end of the event. So, by agreement, I think you wanted to go first.
Yes, and I've just realized that I should have a pen and paper. I'm definitely going to want to take notes.
This pen.
Oh, thank you. All right, start your timer. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for inviting me. Without trying to poison the well too much, I want to say that I'm not generally comfortable with the debate format because I don't think conversations should have winners. Take that for what it's worth, coming from a man who's probably just trying to cushion his ego for when he loses. I think the goal of discussion should be progress, not victory. But human psychology being what it is, debate draws a bigger crowd. Thank you all for coming. I'd like to start by saying that I'm not here to tell anyone that Islam or any other religion's claims are false. My position is that they have not yet, and in some cases cannot, justify some of their claims. Just like the atheist who says there definitely is no God cannot justify their claim. My position is that I am not yet convinced anything supernatural exists, and that logically impossible claims can be safely rejected. I'm not saying you're wrong, I'm saying I'm not convinced. The position I've been asked to defend is why it makes sense to not believe. I'm going to try to first address this more generally than the implied question, why it makes sense to not believe in Islam. All of you have things that you don't believe, and that it makes sense not to believe in. So we're starting from at least some common ground. Beliefs are truth claims, and truth claims are claims about reality, which makes reality the arbiter of truth. I want to point out that making sense is a very low threshold to meet. Scientists call it face validity, and while it's very important, it's the weakest form of validity. The idea that a child practicing their spelling for an hour will improve more than if they only practice for 20 minutes has face validity. Makes sense. But when we actually tested it, it turned out that there was no difference in improvement beyond 15 to 20 minutes. Appears that spelling actually has a genetic component. So just because something makes sense doesn't mean it's real. How is it that we can even talk about things that aren't real? Strap in, this part's going to get confusing. The philosopher Alexius Minon believed that we can have meaningful thoughts about objects that don't actually exist in reality, but that in order to be able to speak meaningfully about something, it must in some sense have being. has to exist in some sense. He proposed a three-level system by which we can talk meaningfully about anything, even things that don't exist. The lowest level of being that he granted is called absistence. It contains every possible thing you can imagine. So, if you can think of it, it absists. Things that cannot exist in reality, things that don't make sense, things like square circles, still absist. The next level up, being subsistence, contains a subset of things like numbers and theorems that can be conceptualized, but don't have a physical manifestation and don't contain any sort of impossibility, like a square circle does. Everything that makes sense subsists, even if it doesn't actually exist. And finally, the top level of being is existence, which contains a subset of things that are actually here in the physical world. So existing things have all three levels of being. They exist, they can be conceptualized, and they can be imagined. I believe that all supernatural beings, by definition, absist. They can be imagined. Some actually subsist because they can be conceptualized without containing any impossibility, but none have yet been shown to exist in physical reality. Metaphorically speaking, there is a domain in which we talk about things. Philosophers call this place a universe of discourse. Inside this universe, statements can be true or false. It's how we can have conversations about whether Superman would beat the Hulk. Yes, he would. Because we've already stepped into this universe of discourse where the rules of the universe allow these fictional people to exist. Now, our default everyday universe of discourse is the actual existent physical world. So, in normal conversation, the statement, Superman can fly, is actually false because Superman doesn't actually exist, and things that don't exist can't do anything. However, within the subsistent comic book universe of discourse, the statement, Superman can fly, is true. So, truth that exists in the subsistent universe of discourse, like comic books, does not necessarily equal truth in our existent physical world. I think that every theology constitutes its own universe of discourse, whether it's absistent or subsistent, within which we can make true or false statements about God. Jesus is the Son of God is true in the subsistent Christian universe of discourse, but false in the Muslim universe of discourse. It's unprovable in the actual existent physical universe. So before we accept any theological claims about reality, we need to first prove that the theological universe of discourse actually exists in the physical world and isn't just subsistent. Otherwise, we're really just talking about whether Superman can be found. Which was a very long way of saying that making sense isn't a reliable method of discerning truth from error, and just because we can talk about something doesn't mean that thing is real. So, in arguing that it makes sense to not believe, what I'm actually arguing is that belief shouldn't be our default position, that we should be skeptical. We should neither automatically accept nor automatically reject anything without sufficient reason, and we should withhold judgment until given sufficient reasons. Of course, we all know that we shouldn't believe everything we're told, because people can be misunderstood, people can be mistaken, and they can be motivated to deceive. We've all signed cell phone contracts here. So, automatic belief is not a good default position. But then neither is automatic rejection, because people can communicate clearly, they can be right, and they can be genuinely acting in our best interests. So we need to withhold our judgment. I've been talking around and about truth a lot without really defining it, so I could be wrong, but I think that truth is that which conforms to reality as adjudicated by predictive power. Now, inherent in that definition, which is kind of confusing, is the concept of falsifiability. We're not justified to accept a claim whose predictions cannot, at least in theory, be disproven. I don't think we're justified to accept string theory, for example. It may be true, but we simply have no way of knowing. Because beliefs are truth claims, and truth claims are claims about reality, beliefs are justified by physical evidence. However, not all evidence is equal, and not everyone's threshold of evidence is the same, which is why I don't accept that homeopathy is medicine, but my brother does. And our thresholds change based on the claim. If you tell me you have a dog, I'm willing to take your word for it. If you want to sell me a puppy, then I'll need more than your word that the puppy exists. I'm going to need, pictures are fine, but I'm going to need to meet the puppy. If you tell me your dog is actually a dragon in disguise, my burden of proof is going to be extraordinary. Specifically, I'm going to need to see, touch, hear, and smell the dragon. And I'm going to need to have others do the same. And we're going to want to record it on my phone in case there's a hallucinogen involved. No amount of words is ever going to be sufficient. Because of the variable quality of evidences, we need to proportion our beliefs to the strength of the evidence. For some things, our evidence could be as weak as a friend told us, or it's an unquestioned assumption on our part. Or the evidence could be as strong as a meta-analysis of longitudinal double-blinded randomized controlled trials or anywhere in between. To be properly skeptical when we encounter a claim that conflicts with what something we already believe, we should not reject it simply because of the conflict. We should examine the evidence for the new claim and re-examine the evidence for our old claim to see which is stronger. There are, however, some things that we cannot test, things we all automatically assume because they seem self-evident, but if push came to shove, we couldn't actually prove it. We assume that there's an existent objective reality outside of our minds, that we're not just brains in jars, and that at least some of our perceptions of that reality are accurate. We assume that other minds exist. We assume some level of uniformity within reality, that the future will mostly resemble the past, because so far it has. And we assume temporal cause and effect, that causes happen before effects. Atheists and believers alike all have to assume these things, or we really can't even function. We have to take these on faith, not evidence. But assumptions interfere with our ability to discern truth from error, and so we should do our best to minimize the number of assumptions that we have. I think these four or five, depending on how you count them, are the fewest we can have, but again, I could be wrong. I used to believe that I had access to some kind of special knowledge, that I would feel absolutely certain something is true based on nothing more than a feeling. And I think I believe that because knowledge causes feelings of certainty, the feelings of certainty were proof of knowledge. Consequently, I also believe that my feelings of certainty were as valid as scientific knowledge, and vice versa. So without ever really putting it into words, I seem to have thought that knowledge was just opinion. Thankfully, I have since learned that it was not. So why does it make sense to not believe? Because believing false things has consequences, because things can make sense without actually being true, because humans can be mistaken, they can miscommunicate, and they can deceive. Reality is the arbiter of truth. We all have a mental map of what we think reality is, and that mental map is like its own universal discourse. It's our worldview. The more accurate our mental map of reality is, the better we're able to navigate the world, and the more likely we are to choose actions that get the results we want. Yes, maybe it's time. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to set up that thing.
Bismillah, alhamdulillah, wa salatu wa salam ala rasulullah, allahumma shrah li sadri wa yassir li amri wa hlul 'uqdatam min lisani yafqahu qawli. So some very interesting points that Charles has brought up. And just to be clear, this portion of my talk is the introduction and not the rebuttal to anything that Charles just said right now. So what reasons do I have for believing? There's many different routes that you can take to belief. If I gave you the route that I took to believe, you wouldn't find it very exciting, because I can't tell you that, you know, I used to be an atheist, I used to be an agnostic or a Christian, I used to be a gangster, I was shooting people on the street, you know, went to jail, all that. No, the truth is quite bland. I was born and raised in a Muslim family, raised by Muslim parents. However, throughout my life, I had to reaffirm my faith for myself. As many of you know, when you are born or at least raised in the West, when you're going to the public school system, when you're going to the public middle school or high school or university system, you're constantly being challenged. Your beliefs in God and religion, in Islam in particular, is always being challenged. So I had to rationally scrutinize and think about my faith and constantly reaffirm it for myself. So I didn't simply adopt my Islam from my parents. I had to go through that route myself. So let's explore one of the possible routes that you can take to belief. And of course, the fundamental belief or concept in Islam is belief in the oneness of the Creator, the oneness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which is known as Tawheed. So one of the routes that can be taken, one of the rational routes, philosophical routes that can be taken to arrive at the belief in the Creator is that we still have to account for reality, regardless of whether we're theists, atheists, or agnostics. The burden of proof is not just on the Muslim or on the theist to prove that God exists. The atheist also has to account for why reality is the way it is. why does reality exist? Why do we exist? Why are we sitting here in this classroom instead of there being nothing? So when you think about this question, there's three possible options that we can use to explain how we arrived here, how the universe arrived here. There's three possible options. These are the three options that occur to my brain, to my mind. Maybe if there's someone doing a second PhD in astrophysics, there might be a fourth option. Maybe if Stephen Hawking were here, with no disrespect to my interlocutor, but Stephen Hawking were here, maybe he'd tell me about a fourth and fifth option. But there's three options, three possibilities that occur to my mind. So one is that the static universe theory, in other words, the universe always existed. Matter, time, space, the laws of physics, this always existed. And therefore, we don't need to ask who created it or what caused it, because it always was. But there's a couple of problems with the static universe theory. One of them is that modern cosmologists have largely dismissed it. Because, as you know, most modern cosmologists believe in the Big Bang theory. So they believe that time and space, the laws of physics, came into existence at a particular moment in time. So that's problem number one with the eternal universe theory. The other problem is the problem of infinite regression. Infinite regression is a fancy word meaning going forever into the past. So if space and if time went eternally, infinitely into the past, we would never arrive at this moment in time now. So to illustrate that with a simple example, if I said to you that we'll meet here again next week, we'll meet here again after 7 days to have part two of this debate, we can traverse 7 days. We can cross 7 days. We can wait 7 days. We just have to wait. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we'll meet here next Wednesday. If I said to you, we'll meet here after a year, 2 years, 5 years, we can do that. If God gave us life, we could meet here after 1,000 years. We can conceptualize that. But if I said to you that we will meet here again in this classroom after an infinite amount of time, will we ever meet again? We will never meet again. If I say to you, we will meet here after an eternity, after an eternal, countless amount of time. We'll meet you here after forever. We will never meet here again. Try that with your mom the next time she asks you to vacuum the living room, right? When are you going to vacuum the living room? Well, I'll do it after an infinite amount of time. I'll do it after an infinity. That means it's never going to get done. So if time went infinitely into the past, to use the domino analogy, if the line of dominoes went infinitely into the past, this last domino would never fall. We would never arrive at Wednesday, February 26, 2020. Okay, the second option to account for the reality of the universe is that the universe came into existence out of nothing. But atheist scientists who have tried to prove this, like Lawrence Krauss, he's written a book, The Universe from Nothing, what you find is that they end up redefining that nothing as something. So that nothing actually becomes energy fields, right? It could be quantum energy, it could be dark matter, it could be black holes, it could be gaseous matter, but that's something. So we're still at the same problem. We've just moved the question one step back. Now we're still gonna ask where the gaseous matter come from, right? Where did these energy fields, where did they come from? So nothing, if by nothing we mean truly nothing, Aristotle gave the best definition of nothing, which is nothing is what the rock dreams of. Nothing is what the rock dreams of. Like, think about that. What is your shoe dreaming of right now? What is my pen dreaming of right now? That's truly nothing. Can anything come into existence? Can anything come into existence out of the dream that my pen is having right now? Let alone the universe, with consciousness, with awareness, with intelligence, with Charles and Sadat having an intellectual conversation at a university. Can that come out of the dream of a rock? No one actually believes that, and if they did, such an atheist would believe in a bigger miracle than what any Muslim or Catholic believes in. So this basically leaves the third option, which is that time and space and matter came into existence at a particular moment in time at the Big Bang, but something must have caused it. Now, whatever caused it could not be inside of space and time, because that's like a mother giving birth to herself. So something, and we can't fully understand this, and I don't claim to fully understand this, but somehow there is a force or an entity that is outside of space, outside of time, outside of the laws of physics that caused the universe to come into existence. That force, that entity is what we Muslims call Allah, the Creator, God. How are we doing on time? So I think this is the best possible route to take to belief in God. And then there's many other questions that can arise from that. Okay, well, how do we know that God speaks or communicates to us? Because we only arrive then at theism, not actually at any Abrahamic faith. And I would say that, well, we should have a good opinion of this Creator. This Creator gave you something, ostensibly gave you something for nothing. Gave you your heart, your kidney, your livers, right? I mean, where did you get these things from? If you lose your eyes, can you go to Walmart and buy another pair? Right? Did you have to plug in your kidneys or your heart into a USB port maybe in the morning to recharge it? Right? So this is a miracle. The fact that your heart has been beating, not just your entire life, but even before you were born, your heart has been beating. So the one that is responsible for giving you this, should you show any kind of gratefulness to that power? Do you owe anything to that power? Would that power, if it exists, have any rights over you? We live in a world where everything has rights. In Canada, everything has rights, right? Women rights I'm cool with, but you know, we've got animal rights, your dog has rights. The street, listen, this floor that I'm stepping on with my dirty shoes, right? The hallway of your university has rights. It has rights. Try to just spill a can of Coca-Cola in the hallway, right? Throw your rubbish or your garbage in the hallway. Someone's going to come along and say, what are you doing, man? Throw it in the side, in the garbage. Don't throw it on the hallway floor. So if the hallway floor has rights, right? If animals have rights, if your pet dog has rights, what about the one that created you? Would he not have rights? So this is why Muslims believe not just in the Aristotelian God, but a God who speaks, a God who communicates, a God who sent not one messenger, but messenger after messenger after messenger, prophet after prophet after prophet, of whom the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam is simply the last. So these are some of the reasons I'll leave with you to consider faith, theism, belief in God, and we'll see how the conversation goes from there.
So we're moving on to part two of the debate. So these are the first arguments. Charles, you get 5 minutes to make your argument. I just want to remind everybody that if any questions should arise, and you have a paper, write it down, and Sister Dima will collect it at the end.
Okay. So human psychology being what it is, I used to believe a lot of things that I no longer do. I believed in ghosts, psychic powers, crystal magic, UFOs, etc., etc. I was certain it was all real. I was convinced of it. Since learning how to think more critically and how to more properly evaluate evidence, I've had to leave my belief in the supernatural behind. I've also had to leave behind my conceit that I had access to some kind of special knowledge, and my conviction that everything happens for a reason. I no longer believe such things because I have come to recognize that there are sufficient mundane, natural explanations for allegedly supernatural phenomena and claims. But belief isn't a choice anyways. We're either convinced of something for whatever reason, or we're not. The quality of our reasons varies, though, and I realized that my reasons for believing were poor and that I could no longer believe. I didn't actually choose to stop believing. I realized that I already had. So belief isn't a choice. I don't think that any one of us here could choose to truly believe something like their foot was made of glass. Most we could do is to act as if that was the case. But we would have to then ignore, excuse, or distort all the evidence to the contrary, like when we stubbed our toe and it didn't break off. We can choose to act as though something is true, but I don't think we can choose to believe that it's true. Now, you might not be convinced if you don't believe me, if you think that belief is actually a choice and that I'm wrong. There's a very simple solution. Just choose to believe that I'm right and that belief isn't a choice, which is problem solved or paradox created. I'm not sure. Our beliefs form a mental map, but they also form a worldview, a lens through which we interpret the world. And that lens is supported by various cognitive biases that all human brains seem to have. One of the more famous and insidious cognitive biases is confirmation bias. Confirmation bias is a tendency to search for, to interpret, to favor, and recall information in a way that confirms or strengthens one's prior personal beliefs or hypotheses. People display this bias when they gather or remember information selectively, or when they interpret it in a biased way. The effect is stronger for desired outcomes, for emotionally charged issues, and for deeply entrenched beliefs. I have had to fight against this every day of my life. People also tend to interpret ambiguous evidence as supporting their existing position. Several mechanisms, such as bias, search, interpretation, and memory, have been invoked to explain various observed behaviors like attitude polarization, which is when a disagreement becomes more extreme, even though the different parties are exposed to the same evidence, something, you know, like a debate. Belief perseverance, which is when a belief persists after the evidence for that for them is shown to be false. And illusory correlation, which is when we falsely perceive an association between two events or situation. What we call luck, I think, is statistics taken personally. A series of psychological experiments in the 60s suggested people are biased towards confirming their existing beliefs, but later work reinterpreted those results as a tendency to test ideas in a one-sided way, focusing on one possibility and ignoring alternatives. I've been guilty of this for at least 30 years in my life. In certain situations, this tendency can bias people's conclusions. Explanations for the observed biases include wishful thinking, the limited human capacity to process information. Another explanation is that people show confirmation bias because they are weighing up the cost of being wrong rather than investigating in a neutral scientific way. However, and this line is from Wikipedia, and I love it, even scientists and intelligent people, note that those are two separate categories, can be prone to confirmation bias. Because we know that confirmation bias and other biases, scientific experiments are actually designed to minimize those effects. This is why we have double-blind trials. What this means is that your worldview lens automatically filters out or distorts things that don't fit. This makes worldviews self-reinforcing. In fact, this means that we only see things that confirm our worldview and miss things that might disconfirm. And this is how human brains do. It's how my brain do. My supernatural worldview was reinforced by confirmation bias.
That's tough.
Oh. My apologies.
Of course. So, Brother Sadat, you have a few minutes for rebuttal.
I want you to imagine somebody who says that they're Muslim. They self-identify as Muslim, and you ask them, do you believe in Allah? And he says, no. Do you believe in Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him? No. Do you believe in the Quran, his revelation? No. You'd say, what business does this guy have calling himself a Muslim, right? Why is he using the label Muslim if he doesn't identify with any of the beliefs? So, I mean, it's the same thing with many atheists. And even this discussion, I think, is an example of that. I always say, if you scratch an atheist a little bit, you find an agnostic underneath. And that's exactly what's happening here, because the line between atheism, or at least soft atheism, and agnosticism is a pretty thin line. In other words, an atheist is someone who's supposed to disbelieve in God or says there is no God. But Charles seems to be making some kind of a distinction. And he's saying that, no, I'm just not really passing judgment on that. I'm waiting for the evidence. But that, to me, sounds more like agnosticism. Because an agnostic, as I understand it, an agnostic is someone who says, I'm not sure. I don't know. Or we can't know. Or maybe there's a God. Maybe there's no God. So in general, what are some of my responses to agnosticism? I would say to an agnostic that if, and this may not apply to Charles, but in general, for those who are agnostics who think that, well, maybe there's a God, maybe there's not a God, I would say, well, why not pray some of the time and not pray some of the time? In other words, why practically live your life as an atheist? Why practically by default live as if there is no God? If the possibility of God exists, then pray and ask for guidance for at least part of the time. They've actually done studies on agnostics and atheists. And the belief in God is so deeply programmed in the human being, which, by the way, confirms what Islam teaches. Islam teaches that we were all born with the fitra. We were born with the natural, innate, pre-knowledge of the existence of our Creator. So that knowledge is so deeply embedded that when they asked atheists or agnostics to say something like, may God cause my mother to have cancer, you know, may God cause me to die in a car crash on the 401 today, they would hesitate to say that. And many of them refused to say that. So, I mean, I don't want to make it too polemical and put you on the spot, but if you hesitate to say something like that, then the flip side of that is that you shouldn't hesitate to ask God for guidance as well, too. At least leave that open as a possibility. The other thing is, you know, Charles is the head of the atheist club, right? Not the agnostic club. So I think this is already an argument against atheism. When the head of the atheist club comes and he's, you know, not ready to defend atheism, that's like the Muslim turning up and saying, look, I'm not going to defend Islam, you know, I'm not too sure about it. So that's another thing to consider. Now, the other thing is it reasonable to say that only things that physically exist, exist? I mean, if your wife asks you, do you love her? Do you say, well, my feeling of love absists because I can imagine loving you. My feeling of love subsists because I can kind of conceptualize it. Now, this is not the way how we live life.
So, Charles, you have 2 minutes for your counter-rebuttal.
Sure. Agnostic is a statement of knowledge. Atheist is a statement of belief. Since I do not have knowledge, I am an agnostic atheist. So, they are two separate questions. I do not have knowledge of God, therefore I do not believe in God. So, I don't see a distinction there. Atheist is about as specific a designation as the word religious. It doesn't tell you very much about anything at all. If someone says they believe in God, that tells you as much as an atheist saying that they don't believe in God. Many atheists actively disbelieve in God. They will actively claim that there is no God. I can't justify that claim. I don't think I'm moving the goalposts, and certainly if you scratch an atheist, if you're scratching an honest one, you are also scratching an agnostic. There are agnostic theists, though, people who admit that they cannot actually know whether there is a God or not, in which case demanding that, or suggesting that I refer to myself as an agnostic instead of an atheist, that doesn't tell you whether I actually believe in God or not. I should have written down one of the other points you made. Regarding whether my love for my wife exists, yes, it does. But it also subsists and it also absists. It is physical. It's biological. When my brain dies, I will stop loving everything. So,
okay. Brother Sadat, you have 5 minutes for your first supporting argument.
Oh, first supporting argument, okay. So as best as I've been able to assess from this short conversation, it seems that like many atheists / agnostics, you're championing empiricism, or what sometimes is called logical positivism, the idea that it's only the physical that exists. So even when you say that your feelings of love for your wife exist, they exist because they physically exist. But I mean, show us. Can we observe that in a laboratory? Are you talking about the feeling of love itself that you're conscious and aware of that you experience? Or are you talking about the expression of love? The expression of love can be physical, right? I can kiss my son. But that can never be a test of whether I actually love him, right? Or whether it's out of some self-interest, you know, that I'm kissing him. So that's something to think about. The other thing is that empiricism, logical positivism, it kind of undercuts itself because it's going out of the realm of science and into scientism. It's claiming that everything that exists has to be empirically testable. It has to be empirically falsifiable. It has to be physically observable. But there's so many things that exist which are not physically empirically testable. So, for example, just the idea that all truths can be proven, existential reality, which you already alluded to. Like, I mean, how would you actually prove that we're not in a dream right now? We've all had dreams where we're sitting in a university classroom. It seemed real at the time because that's why we were worried and that's why we were sweating. And then 1 minute later, we realize, hey, we're awake. So how would you prove that we're not in a dream right now? In fact, how would you prove that you ever had a dream? Right? If I ask you, have you ever dreamed that you're on a mountain or that you're flying? And you say, yes, last week I had a dream like that. Prove it. Prove it. Because I want to be rational and scientific now, right? So it doesn't work like that. How much time is that?
Oh, you have more than 3 minutes.
Yeah. History actually occurring, which again, he was good to allude to, temporal depth. Mm-hmm. The fact that my memories of the past actually exist. We weren't just created an instant ago or 5 minutes ago with false memories programmed into our brain. No, what I remember from last week, that really did happen last week. That really was 7 days ago. How do we prove that? This is by intuition, right? The rules of logic, aesthetic values. Even in mathematics, there's presuppositions. There's axioms or first principles in every field of knowledge. Mm-hmm. Even in mathematics, set theory or presupposing that infinite numbers exist. Yeah, we can take a calculator and put 84,000 times 43,000. But the answer, who's verified it? Who's actually gone out and counted it? Who's actually seen it? So you haven't empirically tested it in that way, which proves that there's different ways of knowing. And just the fact that Charles said that there's some things he takes on faith, again, this is in line with what Islam teaches, because Islam teaches that we're believers first. Before we're knowers, before we're scientists, we're basically fundamentally believers first. So when Charles says that he takes certain things on faith, like temporal depth, like the fact that we're not in a dream right now, or to use an example, that we're not brains in a jar in the matrix, right? He's acting on faith. He's being a believer first before he's being a knower. So if you want to take this kind of skepticism even more seriously, you should actually question even these presuppositions. Are they actually true? Because there's no empirical proof for them. Mm-hmm. And this is not a far-fetched idea. There have been atheist philosophers who have done just that. And people like Nietzsche did just that. And it's not a coincidence that they went crazy near the end of their life too, right? He looked at the abyss looked back. That's it, he's gone, right? So these are some of the things to consider. How about free will, right? How about even consciousness and experience? How would I know of my own consciousness, Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. How do I know that any of you are actually conscious beings? You could be just very advanced androids, or you could just be people in my dream, right? So there's many things that we take on intuition and faith because they're reasonable. And earlier on, Charles said, well, because something is reasonable doesn't mean that it's true. Yeah, but at the same time, it doesn't mean that it's not true either. Other ideas like true love, we mentioned democracy being the best political system. For a blind person, colors. How would you prove colors to a blind man? If he wants to be rational and scientific by your standards, should he or should he not believe in colors? That would be a question that I would like to get an answer on as well. How would you explain transcendent experiences? If you haven't experienced a transcendent experience or a spiritual experience, reading the Bible or praying, doing sujood, when we Muslims prostrate, we pray, hearing the Quran. If not that, maybe it was through experiencing a beautiful piece of art. Maybe looking at something that is aesthetically pleasing or even a piece of music.
So, Charles, you have 3 minutes for your rebuttal.
Sure. I'm unfamiliar with logical positivism, so I will go with, as you described it, the idea that the physical is the only thing that exists. That is not my position. My position is methodological naturalism, which is the recognition that we can only test that which we can detect. If we can measure it, we can test it. There could be all kinds of things beyond the physical, but I simply have no way of knowing. So there's nothing to talk about. I think that my listing of those four presuppositions regarding that other people exist, that objective reality exists, those do need to be skeptically questioned, and we have. And the point is that pragmatism comes in at some point and says, if we don't accept these things, we can't get anywhere. But skepticism then says, but we can always be testing that they're still true. They could change at any point. So we're always waiting for that new information. You asked if a blind man should believe in colors. Well, if they're given sufficient information, yes. If they are given two things and told one is blue and one is green, and then they go around and they ask people independently and say, what is different about these two things? They're both cubes. If they consistently get this one is green, this one is blue, this one is green, this one is black, then they can begin to understand that there is a quality to it that they are unable to perceive. So I don't think that's a problem. I think a lot of the questions that you're asking are about sort of an embodied mind. We can see the electrons firing, we can see the synapses firing in the brain, we can see the oxytocin flowing, but is that love? I think that it is. That's what love looks like from the outside. But what it feels like from the inside is very different. What does the computer feel like when it has a system glitch? We don't know. We know what it looks like from the outside. So I don't really see this as being a problem. I don't think that I'm not being scientific, or at least not skeptical. My concern is, I am a skeptic. I'm an atheist because I'm a skeptic. It wasn't always the case, but it is now.
So, Professor Adat, you have 2 minutes for your counter rebuttal.
So earlier on, Charles said that he feels that we don't really have a choice to believe. But, I mean, does he really intuitively feel that and believe that? You know, because if he did, then, you know, would he come here for a conversation? Would we have a discussion? Would we have a conversation? Would we try to influence other people's views if they didn't have any choice in the matter at all? You mentioned confirmation bias earlier on, right? Which is when you basically want to prove what you believe already. But then I could ask that what he's doing here, is that an example of confirmation bias? So, for example, when you take the Abrahamic concept of God, when you take the concept of Allah, as Muslims believe in him, and say that you basically put him in time and space and say, well, because we can't see him, because we can't test him, therefore he doesn't exist, or we don't have any good reason to believe in his existence. Is that not confirmation bias, right? Is that not confirmation bias? Taking something and putting it into the realm of science, into the physical, and saying, because we can't scientifically test it, therefore it doesn't exist. That seems to me like a kind of confirmation bias as well, too. He mentioned wishful thinking, that religion is basically a form of wishful thinking and fairy tales, that kind of thing. But can atheism or agnosticism, can that be a form of wishful thinking as well, too? The idea that I'm not held to judgment, I'm not morally accountable in any kind of ultimate sense, right? That can be a form of wishful thinking as well, too. There's people who are uncomfortable about the fact that they're being watched by the Creator. They're being monitored. There's a surveillance camera 24/7 on them. They're going to be held to account. There's going to be restraints on their sexual behavior, right? Not making any allegations against you here, right? But this kind of thing. So I would say that atheism, disbelief of any sort, agnosticism, that can also be an expression of wishful thinking. For me, the idea that I'm going to be judged, the fact that I believe in hell, these are not comforting thoughts for me, but I believe in them as true.
So, Charles, you have your second argument, 5 minutes.
Yes, there was more to my original argument that I ran out of time for. I'm going to see if I can sneak a little bit of it in. Regarding worldview, ultimately, once you've adopted a worldview, you are prone to interpret your experiences through it in ways that will support and reinforce that worldview. This is what everybody does. I do it. All those experiences then have potentially been distorted in some way, and so we cannot entirely trust those experiences as evidence to support the belief. And if we can't trust those experiences from after we adopted our worldview, the question becomes, why did you start to believe? And is that a good reason to believe something? I do believe the skeptical worldview is different, though, because it questions its interpretation every time, or as often as it can. So we are seeking to test them before accepting our interpretation and asking, could I be misinterpreting this? Now, we assume that there's an objective reality outside our own minds, that we're not just brains in jars, and at least some of our perceptions of that reality are accurate. Crucially, we must recognize that not all of our perceptions are accurate. For example, I thought I've seen things that I didn't see. I saw a rabbit that turned out to be a bike helmet. I thought that I've heard things I didn't hear, like hearing Luke Skywalker shout, Leia, when he actually shouts Carrie at the end of Star Wars. I thought I touched something I didn't touch. I thought a bug was crawling on me. It was just a stray hair. I thought I smelled things I didn't smell, like burning toast turned out to be a brain tumor. That wasn't me, actually. But you get the idea. And I thought I've tasted things I didn't taste, like a hamburger that didn't actually have a burger patty in it, which maybe is more a comment on quality of McDonald's burgers. But furthermore, we can misremember things. Our memories aren't actually stored like video records to be brought out at any time. Our brains recreate the event each time we remember it. The most quoted line in the movie Casablanca is, "Play it again, Sam." And that line isn't actually in the movie. My mother remembers a trip where my sister almost drowned while swimming, and that never actually happened. What it is a particularly vivid dream that my sister told the story of so many times that my mother now believes its history. It was a very interesting Christmas when we had that talk. And this is true for everyone, and it means that we must lower our confidence level for things which we do not have direct personal experience. As a skeptic, I try not to hold any position absolutely. We must remember that even when everyone in a chain of transmission is being completely honest, at every stage, we are in danger of receiving a miscommunicated misremembering of a misperception, because that's how humans do. And this is fatal to revealed truths, in my opinion. Revelation is only revelation to the first person. If it's revelation to the first person. I am open to evidence of Allah's existence. I don't have any idea what that evidence would look like. But Allah knows, and He knows precisely what would convince me of His existence. He knows that I am open to it. He could do it effortlessly, and He could do it without violating my free will to choose whether or not to follow Him. I would simply then be making an informed choice. Hasn't happened yet, so there really isn't anything more I can do except remain open to the evidence and wait. This is the same, though, for every other god. So when Sadat suggests that I, why not pray sometimes? Well, we know of over 4,000 gods in history. I have to pray to all of them. What I can tell you is that any secondhand information is never going to be convincing to me. At least nothing that a human is capable of doing can be evidence for God's existence. Because humans can be wrong. Humans can deceive. And I think a wise God would know this and would not transmit His message using the same methods that allowed humans to create false gods.
Brother Sadat, you have 3 minutes for your rebuttal.
Yeah, I really appreciate actually what you're saying in the sense that I think this is what is perhaps sometimes labeled or called soft atheism or friendly atheism. So I appreciate the fact that on the one hand you're trying to be open to the evidence, but you still haven't decided what that evidence would look like. So when we are positing a transcendent force, transcendent meaning outside of this world, external to the universe, external to the laws of science, then I hope you understand at least that much of what the evidence will not look like, mm-hmm. right? So you don't need to wait for maybe the cloud formations to say, Charles, become Muslim today. This is not the kind of information or evidence that is going to come your way. It's going to be a different kind of knowing, as I said. You mentioned that you're a methodological naturalist.
Yes.
Hope I got that right. Yeah. So are Muslims, right? That's why we believe in science, right? But scientism is another thing. That is philosophical, you know, naturalism. That, you know what I mean? And that's unproven. Philosophical naturalism is unproven. In other words, folks, the idea that science can prove all of reality, can explain, can demonstrate all of reality, that science can show you truth. Well, there's no proof of that. There's no scientific proof of that, right? So we have to sometimes resort to philosophy and theology and other fields and other disciplines to ascertain what the truth is. The other thing is, there's kind of a bit of a contradiction. On the one hand, you're saying, I will never accept secondhand information. Humans can be wrong. I will not accept human transmission. And yet earlier on, you said that the blind man, if he gets it from reliable testimony, if he hears it repeatedly, consistently, and he receives reliable testimony that colors exist, he should believe that colors exist based on testimony, right? Mm-hmm. So that is to a great extent what Muslims are doing, right? We're taking the testimony of Sahaba, of different chains, of different isnads. Don't confuse Islam with Christianity, right? Mm-hmm. The Quran, we believe, is revealed from above the seven heavens, but it has a human history as well, too, right? And that's not something we run away from. That's something we talk about. That's something we explore. So when that book has been delivered, when you have different companions or disciples of the Prophet, different ones who have had similar experiences and experienced the Prophet experiencing the supernatural, this is testimony, and you can choose to not believe it. But my point is that it's just the difference is only that of threshold. The concept of believing in something due to human testimony, that is not something that is foreign to your belief system. That is not something that is foreign to your worldview. The fact that we believe our fathers are our fathers, we're going on testimony, folks, right? Most of us haven't been on Jerry Springer, gotten DNA tests and thrown chairs at people. We're going by testimony. My father is my father. So reliable testimony is a legitimate means of attaining knowledge and truth.
So, Charles, you have 2 minutes for your counter rebuttal.
Okay. I absolutely agree regarding this scientism and philosophical naturalism. It's by definition and almost by design, it is untestable. That's why I don't actually accept it. Science doesn't seek to actually... It can probably never give us truth. What it gives us is increasing approximations of truth. You make a good point. I like the point regarding a blind man trusting other people for this information for something that he cannot experience. And that is an excellent analogy. I think, however, that Allah is of a different category. And in fact, I'll just move it to the supernatural. And if we have a natural explanation, I don't see any justification. In fact, I have yet to come across a justification for saying it's supernatural instead of we don't know. Reliable human testimony, absolutely. The question is it reliable? And the question is, how do we know that it's reliable? And there is at least one point in the transmission that is not human. And we have no way of knowing about the character of Jibreel. We have no way of knowing whether Jibreel told the truth. So we have to take that on faith, which means the best we can say is that the Quran is the word of Jibreel. That's as far back as we can make it. I don't think that's a good idea if Allah or is real. So
Brother Sadat, you have 5 minutes for your second argument?
I think the examples that you gave of like false memory, where people in your family thought they remembered incidents that happened, that occurred, but they didn't actually occur, or maybe they didn't occur in that way. Ultimately, none of that negates the original example that I began with. The original example is one that we still have to think of, which is that either there's an infinite universe, which, mind you, even if you were to believe in it, an infinite universe would by definition be supernatural. It would be metaphysical, because you can't measure infinity in the physical universe. Infinity doesn't actually exist in the physical universe. Infinite numbers don't actually exist. We can't test them. We can't verify them. So if you believe in that kind of infinity, then you have basically backed up into a supernatural corner. If you believe, on the other hand, that the universe came into existence out of truly nothing, absolutely nothing, i.e. the dream of the rock, then again, this is a bigger miracle than what any Muslim or Catholic believes in. In other words, that would be a supernatural position. And if you take the theistic explanation that there is a force, a transcendent force outside of space, matter, and time, that is the cause of the physical, natural universe, of course, that is also a supernatural metaphysical position, which is the one that Muslims take. So my point is that you can't really escape from this trichotomy. You can't escape from that. And if you say, well, there has to be a naturalistic explanation or we don't know, it's a true dichotomy to say that there has to be a naturalistic explanation for nature, for the origin of nature, or a supernatural explanation. If you say that there's a naturalistic explanation for the origin of the natural universe, then that's like saying that the mother gave birth to herself. That's like saying nature caused nature. So by definition, then the option that we're left with is that something supernatural, something metaphysical, meaning above and beyond the physical, is the cause of the naturalistic universe. On a side note, and this isn't even for the debate, this is just as friends. When you talk about these 4,000 gods, how many of them are actually in use? Most of them have fallen into disuse. Are you counting Zeus? Are you counting Thor?
Yep.
These people weren't able to defend their own Greek-speaking lands from the encroaching Christians and Christianity. So I would say, why should I put faith in pagan gods that weren't able to defend themselves? The other thing is, remember that we're not comparing words. It's not as simple as saying, well, why Allah? Why not Zeus? Why not the spaghetti monster? Why not pink unicorns? We are comparing concepts. So when we're talking about Allah, we are talking about the transcendent force beyond the universe. When we're talking about Thor and Zeus and spaghetti monster, we're talking about Marvel superheroes. We're talking about Marvel superheroes. So what you're really saying is, instead of believing in a transcendent force for all the reasons that you gave me, why don't I just believe in a Marvel superhero? In other words, powerful superhumans that have some really cool mutant powers. So it's comparing not just apples and oranges, it's comparing apples with like the laws of gravity. It's a complete non-comparison.
Yes,
sir. Oh, yeah, I got time?
Yeah, you got time.
Oh, okay. Right. The other thing is, out of the Eastern religions that are still in use today, if you really think about it, the Eastern religions mostly are perennialist. So what we mean by that is that most of the Eastern religions, Hinduism, Jainism, Buddhism, Sikhism, I wasn't intending to have a debate with an agnostic, actually. I thought it was going to be more of an atheist. But since we're here, those religions are perennialist, which means that they teach that all paths lead to salvation. I'm using the Judeo-Christian kind of term here, but nirvana, moksha, escape from the cycle of life and death. In other words, a Hindu, Sikh, Jain, Buddhist will tell you that if you're a Muslim, you're just fine. As long as you're a good Muslim, you don't join ISIS, kill innocent people, anything like that, all paths lead to God or all paths lead to salvation. In other words, my point being that if Hinduism is correct and you're not a Hindu, you don't have to worry about it. If Sikhism, Jainism, Buddhism is correct and you don't fall into any one of those religious categories, don't have to worry about it. It's okay. Right? And those religions teach that in reincarnation. In other words, you get to come back for a makeup test anyways. Imagine if you're sitting right now writing an exam. It's a final exam, so-called final exam in your university. Your professor says good luck to you. But if you fail the exam, no problem. You can come back next week and write the exam again. And if you fail next week, no problem. Come back the next week and write the exam again. And you have an endless number of makeup exams. Are you going to stay up all night cramming and sweating, worrying about this exam? That's not going to be your attitude. You're going to say, look, man, if I pass, I pass. If I fail, I fail. So really, it boils down to Christianity and Islam. I would argue you can actually boil it down to Christianity and Islam, because both of these religions are to some extent making exclusivist claims and making salvific claims. Christianity saying that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the light. He died on the cross for your sins. If you get it wrong, you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. And Islam is saying that belief in Allah and following His commandments is the way.
Charles, you have 3 minutes.
Okay.
That's for your rebuttal.
Yeah, I apologize. I didn't actually rebut or address your questions about the static universe, Big Bang, etc. Static universe is still possible, depending on how you define the universe. If you want to use the word cosmos, which would be that space in which our universe exists, there's no reason why that can't be infinite. You claim an infinite regression. I don't think that's a problem because we exist in a universe that is only 13.8 billion years old. What came before it might be infinite. And it may be a rock that, through whatever processes, natural laws exist in that cosmos, periodically births universes. And only those universes that have physical laws that actually can sustain a universe long enough for life like us to evolve are those we happen to be in a universe like that. The idea of philosophical nothingness, we have no reason to think that's even possible, and we certainly have no reason to assume that it's the default. Every objection raised against an infinite universe or an uncreated universe applies to Allah as well, and it's special pleading to suggest that He's an exception to it. If the universe was created from nothing, if Allah created it from nothing, how does a cause acting on nothing has no effect? So unless Allah created it out of Himself, there was nothing for Him to create it from. A deistic God could have accidentally created our universe. There's no reason to assume intent. We are presupposing intent from the fact that, well, this universe seems to suit us pretty well. But then a puddle thinks that the ground fits it pretty well when it actually fits the ground. And a deistic God could have, because He's unable to create, cannot act on anything that doesn't exist, cause can't have any effect on something that doesn't exist. Maybe that God sacrificed Himself and created the universe out of their body and no longer exists.
Last time. So, Dad, you have 2 minutes for your counter rebuttal.
So what Charles is mentioning here, without using those labels, it kind of sounds like the oscillating universe theory, or maybe multiverse theory. Perhaps there's other universes in which the conditions are different, and therefore us finding ourselves in this universe, which is so finely tuned. I mean, the initial conditions of this universe had to be so finely tuned, something like 10 to the power of 10 to the power of 34, something like this, that even atheist scientists, even people like, I think Richard Dawkins even has said that the universe appears to be finely tuned. Stephen Hawking has said the universe appears to be finely tuned. So to kind of escape the teleological implications of that, to escape the idea, in other words, of God having designed and finely tuned it, instead of believing in God, which is definitely an unseen, mm-hmm. empirically unverifiable entity, many atheists are positing then the belief of multiple unseen, empirically unverifiable entities, which are these multiple universes. Where are they? Can we see them? Can we ever journey to them? If we can journey to them and see them, then are we in another universe, or is that just part of our universe? These are some of the philosophical problems associated with investigating multiverse. So multiverse or oscillating theory basically seems to be a cop-out on the part of some atheists. To me, it sounds like superstition. And earlier on, even Charles said that that's why he doesn't believe in string theory, or perhaps is undecided on string theory, because show me these strings. Show me these strings. So all I'm saying is that if it's difficult for you to believe in an unseen, empirically unverifiable entity, i.e. Allah, God, instead of that, it makes no sense to posit multiple, perhaps infinite unseen, empirically unverifiable entities, i.e. these so-called multiple universes, which we've never seen.
So Charles, you have your 5 minutes to carry your third and final argument?
Certainly. Just a second. That's okay.
No worries.
Okay, so talked about that belief is not shouldn't be the default. We've talked about cognitive biases that at least some. We didn't talk about necessarily the ones that can explain why people presume supernatural, that we have what was sometimes called an overactive causal agency detector. If something happened, we assume that something caused it, when that is not necessarily the case. Lightning could have started the fire, didn't have to be something. Now, we did talk about the cognitive biases and how we have to question our perceptions. Not everything that we perceive is accurate. And not everything we're told is accurate. We don't communicate properly. And now we need to deal with the unreliability of faith as a means of discerning truth from error. It seems that we have a history of between 8 to 12,000 gods throughout history that have all been worshipped through faith. It wasn't by evidence. No one believed in Zeus because Zeus was there throwing thunderbolts. If Islam is true, then at most, three of those gods, which are all the same god, the god of Israelites, the God of Christians, and the God of Muslims. Only three times was faith right. Which means that faith has been right once out of every 2,600 to 4,000 times, depending on how many gods you want to assume. Think of how little trust most people put in weather predictions, and they're actually right more often than they're not. They're pretty reliable. Would you call a meteorologist who had been wrong 26,000 times, or 2,600 times in a row, reliable? Or would you find different meteorologists because you need to know what the weather's going to be like this weekend? Sadat suggested that it's an unfair comparison to compare Zeus with Allah. I think this is an error in thinking. The fact that the Allah concept has survived means that it survived. But the older God concepts were very much more down to earth. Mount Olympus was a place. You could climb Mount Olympus. Those gods don't survive. The gods who have survived, the claims about them, they have moved further and further into unfalsifiability, to the point where they no longer even exist in this universe, in this time and space. So, being unfalsifiable, they are able to withstand scrutiny. I would also suggest that, without trying to be confrontational, the God of Allah is borrowing from Christianity, which is borrowing from the Israelites, from Judaism. So the adopting a successful model is a good idea, at least for a starting point. I don't accept faith for three reasons. One, because faith, when it's not being used as a synonym for trust, hope, or confidence, none of which are evidence either, always seems to mean belief without evidence. A lack of evidence cannot be used as evidence. Two, because faith doesn't cause beliefs. Beliefs cause faith. An effect can't be its own cause. And that because faith supports all religions equally, some of which must be false for others to be true, it means it doesn't actually help us discern true beliefs from false ones. I don't think it's fair to say that the multiverse idea and God are equivalent, because the multiverse is still using natural explanations, where God is a complex being, and we've never seen a complex being that didn't arise through evolution.
Sandat, you have 3 minutes for your rebuttal.
So to address a few things that I haven't touched on yet, which Charles mentioned, he mentioned the possibility of a deistic God. Deism is the idea that God or a higher power exists, but he's simply not concerned with our lives. He's just kind of let things roll, and he's not really involved in our lives anymore. And again, the fact that so many ex-Christians in the West have become deists, to me that, again, just really reaffirms the truth of the teaching of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, in regards to the fitrah, the natural spiritual compass, intuition, and pre-knowledge in us that tells us that our Creator must exist. Think about it. In university, most of the people that you're sitting next to, right, in your university classes, people with Christian names like Michael, John, Stephen, when you talk to them, they're not Christian anymore, right? They're not Christian anymore. But most of them still claim to believe in some kind of a higher power. So this shows me that it's easy enough to shake the Bible off. You can shake off Catholicism, you can shake off the church, but shaking off God is a much harder and much more radical thing to do. The other problem with deism is that it gives us a very bad role model. So imagine me, getting married, my wife gets pregnant. As soon as she delivers the child, I say, hey, I'm out of here. Good luck, right? So now it doesn't matter whether you're an agnostic, Christian, atheist, Muslim, Jew, whatever. You're going to think this is a bad person, right? This is a bad role model. And as the child grows up, I never phone him. I never communicate to him. I can't be bothered even to friend him or her on Facebook. You might say, what kind of a dad are you? You're an absent father, a deadbeat dad, right? So the problem with deism is that it makes God into a deadbeat God, a deadbeat God. God created us, and then he says, okay, I'm out of here. I'm not going to communicate. I'm not going to give you any guidance. I'm not going to help you. No advice. I'm just going to let you be. So imagine a world in which the deistic God world, what would be the implications for human morality then? Then a bad father, an absent father like that could say, hey, I'm just following a godly example. That's what God did with us, right? God created us and doesn't care, right? So I created a baby and I don't care. So these are some of the moral problems that you have to think about when you're exploring the possibility of deism. You mentioned that humans have an overactive causal detection mechanism. Mm-hmm. Well, again, I mean, we can just flip that over and say, well, why do we have that? Could it be that God created us with this overactive causal detection mechanism so that we would be able to better arrive at the conclusion that he exists, that the universe itself must have a cause? Since everything else that we see in the natural universe has a cause, well, then the universe, nature itself, must have a cause. And as I said earlier on, the cause of nature cannot be natural. What caused nature has to then, by definition, be supernatural.
Charles, have 2 minutes for your time, everybody.
The fitra does exist. It exists in many religions throughout the world and in many non-religions. It's because it has been observed. Islam observed it and called it the fitra. They attributed it to God. In fact, it evolved. The core of the fitra is the result of natural selection. Our cognitive biases come from natural selection. An overactive causal agency detector is an error in thinking, because if you see something, if you see a shadow and assume it is a predator, even if it isn't, you run away. You survive long enough to reproduce. If you see a shadow and don't assume it's a predator, and it is a predator, then your genes don't propagate to the next generation. So those genes get weeded out. I think this is looking at things upside down. Same with the moral distinction. To my mind, the universe looks absolutely no different if people only believed in God. But God didn't exist. You say that Allah might have given us this overactive causal agency detector. I question whether that's a good thing, and why wouldn't you just give us an accurate one? Do I have 2 minutes or three?
You have 15 seconds.
Okay. I think that's everything I've got at the moment. You said nature can't cause itself. You don't know that in this case.
That's time. Alright, so now to have your third and final argument. 5 minutes.
This is a big one to bring up near the end. It's just that I lost track of
which arguments.
No, but this is my third argument. Hopefully, I guess we'll have a chance to do a rebuttal. So the other implication of atheism, even a soft atheism that just kind of abstains from voting on the question of whether God exists or not, is the implication that it has for morality. So I always tell atheists, you know, be a true disbeliever. We're used to Muslims and Christians telling each other, be a true believer. You're not a true believer. But I tell atheists, look, if you're going to be a disbeliever, be a true disbeliever and recognize the implications that the absence of God has for morality and for our worldview. So Nietzsche did that. The new atheists don't do that. They offer kind of a high school level bland atheism. But the old atheists did do that. Nietzsche recognized that in the absence of God, there would be many pretenders to the throne. And the 20th century had many atheistic communist dictators who did claim that throne, right? It's still claimed in North Korea today by their president, Stalin, Mao, Pol Pot, etc. So these people lived like gods on earth. They created, instead of believing in what you might call an imaginary hell, they created the hell on earth, right, in order to control people. If religion is just a form of control, well, how do you control people in the absence of religion? And were there more or less control mechanisms and laws in these atheistic communist states which we witnessed in the past century? So this is something to think about. True, I've been mentioning Allah and the Abrahamic God, yet at the same time, it's very important to recognize the differences between the Islamic concept and understanding of God and the Christian concept and understanding of God. And unfortunately, you know, there wasn't a Christian debater who was able to come. But if Islam was simply borrowing from Christianity, and Christianity was borrowing from Judaism, well, then Islam forgot to borrow the most unbelievable parts of Christian theology and Christian theism. Islam forgot to borrow the part about God becoming a human being. Islam forgot to borrow the part about God dying on a cross. Islam forgot to borrow the part about God being a trinity, for which there's no good rational or philosophical reason for why God should be three persons. The other thing is, when you say that religion only got it right three times, that is an assumption. Earlier on, you said that the absence of evidence is not evidence against something. So the absence of evidence of other monotheistic religions that essentially believe in the same one God, that's not an evidence against monotheism having existed. Right? Remember, somebody who believes in Islamic-style monotheism is not going to make statues and idols of their God. So you're not going to be digging them up. Archaeologists, cultural anthropologists are not going to be digging up statues of Allah and saying, aha, look, people believed in Allah all along. No, by definition, we don't make statues and images of the divine. And when you actually talk to people from various cultures, you find that the idea of a supreme, unseen, transcendent God, this is a very cross-cultural belief. Thor is not a cross-cultural belief. It requires information transfer. Pink unicorns, spaghetti monsters, Hercules, that requires information transfer. In other words, you have to be taught. Like the Prophet said, we're all born Muslim, and then your parents make you Jew, Christian, or Magian. So the idea in a transcendent supreme God or a sky God, this is cross-cultural and oftentimes not taught. Talk to the aboriginals of this land, Charles. The aboriginal tribes that inhabited Ontario, that used to live in Guelph, that used to live on this land, talk to them. I've talked to them. How many of them will tell you that they believe in a creator spirit? They don't believe that the mountain or the tree is ultimately God. They believe in the creator spirit. Many of the more philosophical Hindus that you speak to, they'll say, yes, we believe in these many thousands of incarnations of God, which you elaborated on, but ultimately they're all incarnations or expressions of the one supreme Atma or the one supreme spirit. So monotheism is something hard to run away from. It's not the case that only Judaism, Christianity, and Islam got it right. The Quran explicitly says that Allah sent messengers and warners to every nation. You know, we often like to explore the similarities between Islam and Christianity because we Muslims think that that's a good way of gaining acceptance from the society, right? But exploring the differences are actually very interesting as well. That's very interesting to explore as well. And nowhere in the Bible do you explicitly get the idea that God sent non-Israelite prophets, Chinese prophets, Japanese prophets, Indian prophets. But if God is just, He would do exactly that. And that's what our prophet taught. He taught that God sent 124,000 prophets to mankind throughout of history. So, it's like the average attention span, I think. Half an hour that camera just shuts
that's,
down.
That's generous. Yeah.
So, Charles, you have 3 minutes for your rebuttal.
Okay. The morality question doesn't bother me, honestly. It is one that I have thought about for a long time. It's one that I discuss frequently. And I think if we look at what we see in the world, a naturally selected morality and people building on it in their own unique ways explains what we're seeing better than a monotheistic God does. When I say that Islam borrows from Christianity, they didn't forget to leave out the absurd things. Obviously, if you leave out the absurd things, this is selection pressures. This is how humans work, that those things which are believable survive as memes. Those that aren't get forgotten. I don't see anything in this that a human couldn't have done. And that human might have believed that they were divinely inspired. That doesn't mean they were. So I think we need to ask, could a human have taken beliefs from other cultures and melded them together into something? And I think that certainly they could. You say that Thor isn't cross-cultural. Certainly he isn't, but he's a thunder god. And thunder gods are cross-cultural. Even in North America, the thunderbirds are a spirit that controls the thunder. This is humans looking at a natural phenomena and attributing a supernatural cause to it. Once again, an overactive causal agency detector. If that something is causing that, the idea that you have a God who controls something and that you might be able to bargain with that God, so if you can propitiate with a God to give you a good crop to hold off from destroying your crop, then absolutely you would do that because that crop is your life. I've apologize. That's as, I think that's as far as I've got. I had said, got 10 seconds again, to address the idea that nature can't cause itself. The universe didn't cause itself, but whatever exists outside of it may have caused it.
Sad that you have 2 minutes for your counter rebuttal.
Okay, this almost sounds kind of like double talk. The universe didn't cause itself, if I heard correctly, but you know, whatever was outside of it or something that could have been outside of it could have caused it. Well, if we're defining the universe as the natural universe that we inhabit, then that's my whole point. That's something outside of nature, something outside of science, something outside of logical positivism or empiricism caused the universe to come to existence. That would be my point. One of Charles' objections was that, well, God would be a complex being, so that itself demands explanation. Well, I mean, that's only if you presuppose materialism and naturalism as the only thing that exists. In other words, if you're trying to slot God and into the material universe and thinking of him as some kind of supercomputer in the sky, yeah, then that would be a problem we would have to explain. But that's not what we're positing God to be. You gave an example of how our overactive causal detection mechanism would help us survive. So, I mean, I see a shadow in the dark. Better for me to assume that it's something dangerous because that will help me survive. There's many aspects of religion which are not so easily explained through Darwinian evolution, such as our belief in the afterlife. How exactly does the belief in the afterlife help me live longer? Who would live longer, the rabbit that believes in heaven or the rabbit that doesn't believe in heaven? Which one's going to get eaten first? So not all of these things necessarily fit in, I think, with Darwinian evolution. Yes, you said that while Islam, perhaps, without using the word improve, I'll use the word improve, that Islam was improving on Christianity and making the gods seem more reasonable and less falsifiable. But actually, this seems counterintuitive to history because the Prophet, peace be upon him, living in an environment where they were worshiping 360 gods, there would be no immediate need for him to have to persuade people that there's only one God.
All right, so we're moving on to part three of the debate, which is the closing arguments. Everybody gets eight minutes.
If I can ask, when you started there, Sadat, you had said that you're saying that it has to be outside of nature, outside of science, and then there were two other things that you said it would necessarily be outside of. The cause of the universe would necessarily be outside of
the natural universe. I mentioned that if you think of God as an idea instead of a complex supercomputer in the sky, then you don't have to worry about this problem of how do we explain the complexity of God. You know, ideas are often simpler than the material things that they create.
No, it was a list of things that it would necessarily need to be outside of. So we can add that into my time. It's fine. Closing arguments. Jeez, I'm not as prepared as I should have been. Muslims use the Quran and Hadith as evidence to support their claims from within the Islamic universal discourse. Just as Christians use the Bible to support from within the Christian universal discourse, and just as all revealed religions use their scriptures as evidence. These universes of discourse subsist. It certainly can be imagined. Some subsist because they contain known possibilities, like a square circle. I suggest that Christianity does not subsist, because the Trinity is impossible, and all are claimed to exist. I remain unconvinced. The scriptures absolutely exist. The Hadith exist. The Quran exists. But we don't have any real world method of confirming the claims made about things like the existence of angels or demons or even Allah. I've got something in here about there's a difference between knowing and believing. We cannot know something that isn't true. So we can believe that 1 plus 1 is 17, but we can't possibly know it. That's not, because it's not true. So knowledge is a belief that is true. Skepticism, the benefit to being a skeptic, and I am skeptic, and as I said, I'm an atheist because I'm a skeptic. I have always been an atheist throughout my entire life. I wanted to believe in God. I prayed to Jesus. I heard nothing back. So while I wanted to, and I never actually believed in Jesus, I never actually believed in God, so I've always been an atheist, but my reasons were just awful. It was just an assertion. It was basically me being contrary, because I didn't want to be told what to do. Exactly, I don't. And also that I think the idea of being judged when... I think the game is rigged. Until I have sufficient evidence, until Allah or Jesus or whoever reveals himself to me to prove that they exist, it's unfair. I can't tell a difference between any of the gods. So the idea of a father who hides himself and then demands a relationship with me or punishes me for not having the relationship, it doesn't even work because I had to have a father. I don't have to have had a god. But one of the benefits of being a skeptic is that when you find out you're wrong, you're not wrong anymore. Because you've abandoned the belief. That's how it works. You have to accept it. You've discarded the old position in light of new evidence. My old worldview map, the one that had ghosts and such in it, eventually I had to admit it was not giving me reliable results. It wasn't actually mapping to reality. There were real-world obstacles that weren't on the map, and where the map showed, there were paths where the map showed nothing but walls. Mostly it was paths that never actually went anywhere. And as I started to learn more about the world, I started to update my map, and I found that I had entire sections of it upside down because of a causal agency detector and other things like that. As a kid, I was afraid of being deceived, and so I automatically rejected most new claims. But I also wanted people to like me, so I accepted a lot of things automatically, too. Since I care about truth now, I want to know as many true things and as few false things as I can, so that helps me achieve the things I want to. Regarding God being outside of, or the cause being outside of nature, cause of being outside of nature, yes. Being outside of science, not necessarily. If we can get access to that, the scientific method would still apply to it. Why do we believe in the afterlife? Because our only experience of non-existence is sleep. And when we sleep, we dream, and we seem to go somewhere else. And if you believe in a soul, because if you believe that your dreams are actually you going somewhere else, it only makes sense. Like, it is so difficult to wrap our heads around the idea that my father-in-law no longer exists, but at the same time, he didn't exist before he was born. So why is that so hard to understand? But it's literally impossible to have experience with non-existence. In order to experience anything, you have to exist. So the idea that we continue to exist because we think we always have. It's the only thing we've known. It doesn't... This isn't surprising to me. I don't think... again, we don't choose our beliefs. We're either convinced or we're not. I think we should not accept beliefs automatically, and I think skepticism is the way to go. Ultimately, my skepticism for Islam has to, even if I grant that the limits of methodological naturalism tell us that the Quran is the word of Muhammad. That's as much as it can do. It can tell us that if he claimed it wasn't his word, it can tell us that everyone else believed it wasn't his word. But it can't actually show us that it isn't his word. That's a limit. But assuming it was a revelation by a supernatural being to him, why do we believe that it was telling the truth? If Christianity was true, and I was Satan, and I wanted to lead as many souls as I could into my domain, I would pretend to be Jibreel. I would teach all of these different things. I would draw people away from the truth. But I don't believe any of that, because I still have no reason to believe that something supernatural exists. And unfortunately, I don't know if it's even possible to have evidence for the supernatural.
That's hard.
Thank you.
So, Adnath, you have 8 minutes for your closing argument.
I allow people to self-identify as they please. And that's the Canadian way. So Charles wants to self-identify now as an atheist, although he strikes me more as an agnostic. And he also wants to self-identify retroactively as an atheist too. And he says, I was always an atheist. This makes it sound more natural. This makes it sound like it's not taught. This makes it sound like perhaps it's even more intuitive to disbelieve and just be skeptical, although I've shown that human beings are by nature believers first. All right. So despite all this talk about rationality and skepticism with respect, Charles is a believer first. He's not taking his skepticism far enough, right? See, there's two ways to win a tug of war. You know, you can either outpower your opponent, make them fall, or what can you do? You can just let go and see how far he falls back. So I'm saying you should be skeptical then all the way. If you think that skepticism is the way to go, then I've given you a whole list of things to be skeptical about. Temporal depth, the fact that we are actually experiencing reality right now, your father. Of course, we have to have a father. We all have to have a biological father. But my point is that your father is your father. How do you know that? That's based on testimony. That's not even based on multiple testimony. That's probably based on the testimony of one woman, that you accept who your father is your father. The idea that we're not in a dream right now, right? The fact that we weren't created 5 minutes ago. The fact that science can reveal ultimate meaning and truth and the purpose and meaning behind our lives. All of these are presuppositions which you haven't proven and which you can never prove scientifically. You can try to argue for it through reason, through rationality, through philosophy, using religion and theology, but you can never prove it scientifically. So if you say skepticism is the way to go, I say become even more skeptical than you are. Be skeptical about all of these axioms and first principles that you're just taking completely on faith, using your own language. You said you take it on faith. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, again, just to add to what I was saying previously, if you think that Muslims think that, you know, religion only got it right 3 times in history, I've shown that the history of monotheism has been there throughout. The other thing is, unlike our Christian friends, it's not a case of we're spirit breathed. You know, I've got the Holy Spirit in me, and you've got like the spirit of Satan in you. It's not like this. Islam actually allows more leeway for human error. We can actually make misjudgments, as you said. We can get things wrong. Our reason can lead us in the wrong direction. So we don't look at non-Muslims and automatically assume, well, this guy is worshiping the devil or something like this, right? And my point there being that even these ancient cultures that attributed thunder to the thunder god, we're not even saying they're completely wrong. We're not even saying they're completely wrong. I can call Allah the thunder god. That doesn't mean that he's relegated only to the duties of causing thunder. But ultimately, who is in charge of the weather, of the cosmos, of the winds, we believe Allah is. Now you can say, well, there's naturalistic explanations now, so we don't need God. But this misses the important fact that there can be multiple explanatory slots. You can have a scientific, naturalistic explanatory slot, and you can also have a philosophical or a theological explanatory slot. So for example, if you were to ask, you know, how did these words get onto this paper, right? Well, I mean, the ink came out of a pen and came onto the paper. That might be the naturalistic or scientific explanation for how the words got onto the paper. But another explanatory slot on a philosophical level, which I can't prove to you empirically, is that the ideas formed in my mind, right? I had ideas in my mind, and I wished to record them and transcribe them. That's why I physically wrote them down, right? So there can be different explanatory slots, and our atheist or agnostic friends have to understand that. You were mentioning dreams. Again, I'd like to emphasize that dreams are metaphysical experiences. You have spiritual experiences every night of your life, if you dream. We have transcendent spiritual experiences every night of our life. Earlier on, he said the morality problem doesn't bother him. Well, this bothers me. Mm-hmm. This bothers me big time. If you tell me that the only reason it's wrong to rape children or to murder or to sleep with your sister is because of social agreements, which you didn't put that put that explicitly, but that would be the implication, that social agreement, you know, society's opinion determines that to be wrong or evil. This is somehow not emotionally satisfactory, right? If the human being is just a body of chemicals, then why should murder be wrong, right? Why should murder be wrong? So many of the things that you assume to be good and bad, when our atheist agnostic friends say that, well, you know, I can be good without religion, you're piggybacking on religion. You're smuggling in religious values and opinions oftentimes into your moral worldview. Otherwise, on a purely materialistic, Darwinian, atheistic worldview, what would be wrong about killing someone? What would be wrong about having non-consensual sex with an animal? Sorry to give crude examples, right? But the reason I have to give crude examples is because that's what we've fallen to now as a society. That's where we've fallen to now as a society. You know, if I said, prove to me that two men sleeping with each other is wrong, you're going to say, no, it's not wrong. So we got to move the example. We got to lower the bar now and say, well, what about two consensual brother and sister having sex, right? What about a father sleeping with his adult daughter? Or what if those power dynamics aren't there? You know, so we have to move on to necrophilia, zoophilia. Why are any of these things wrong? It doesn't bother him that perhaps he believes they're objectively, they're not wrong. They're not wrong. It's just your opinion. It's just society's opinion. Is that all morality is? Your opinion versus my opinion? Is evil just your opinion versus my opinion? Is love just a biological device or trick to make me want to mate and share my DNA and have children? Then ironically, it would actually be that atheistic worldview that reduces women to just baby-making machines. See what I'm saying? Because for Muslims, my wife is not just a baby-making machine. I believe in true love, right? I believe I actually love her. Our book says that Allah put love and affection in our hearts for each other. But if mating and what you call love and these neural responses in the brain is just evolution's way of tricking me into sharing my DNA and reproducing, that worldview actually just reduces women to baby-making machines. Again, he mentioned, well, that he'll never believe in angels and things like that. And Charles is being very polite, you know. A much harsher atheist might say, come on, man. You university guys, do you really believe Isra wal Miraj? You believe that the Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, went, ascended to the second heavens and this, that? So, but I, in response to all of those things, I would say that if you believe the universe came from nothing, then again, you believe in a far greater miracle than anything that Muslims, Catholics, Jews, Buddhists, or anyone else believes in. The other thing is, by constantly resorting to the cop-out of, well, I just don't know, we can't know, we can never know, the problem with agnosticism is that at some point it runs out of gas. And that point is the point of death. On the day of judgment, your abstention from voting, that's going to be considered a no vote, right? Mm-hmm. Also, something very interesting that he mentioned, and I appreciate that, is that Charles said a couple of things that really struck my attention. He said that I used to believe in a lot of things because, you know, I wanted to be liked, right? Mm-hmm. So, Okay. Well, the final question would be that do you disbelieve today because you want to be liked? Because societal pressures still act on you even today in academia, in the university.
So if anybody has any questions written down, anything they would like for the representatives to answer, please pass it to Sister Dima. She's the one waving over there.
Bring it closer.
Oh, no, we're just going to have the questions on paper, so I'll read it out.
Okay, that's all right. You'll still capture the words.
Okay. So for the first question that we have, it's for you, Charles. So it asks if you believe in a soul, and if you do, then why? If you don't, then why not?
No. I don't believe in soul. If by soul you mean that something that is me that will exist, continue to exist after my body dies. I do not believe that. The reason I don't believe it is because I don't have evidence to believe it. That's it. That's it. It's going to be the answer to why I don't believe things. So I am not yet convinced.
All right. So I believe the second question that we have is also for you, Charles. It says, how does enforcing atheism help anyone?
Probably. I have no idea. I don't think it helps at all. Is someone enforcing it? I mean, the Chinese government's enforcing it. That's not a good idea. No, absolutely. That's a bad idea. Believe what you believe. But I'm not trying to force atheism on anyone.
So, last question is for Brother Sadat. It says, what are the rights of animals in Islam? You spoke of them in the West. What about in religion?
Animal rights in Islam, again, are grounded on an objective morality that comes from the Creator. I believe that without God, without having that objective standard, C.S. Lewis was a Christian apologist, put it very beautifully. He said, how can you call a line crooked unless you have an idea of a straight line, right? So if I drew a line on the wall and I said that's straight, and then Charles drew a line on the wall, said that's straight. How are we going to measure whose line is more straight? We need to get a straight ruler. In other words, we need a standard which is outside of me and my opinion. We need a standard which is outside of Charles, which is outside of his ideas and his opinion. And we need to actually look and measure, and that's how we would figure out which one is the straight line. So in the same way, to find out straight behavior, not in a sexual context here, but to find out what is right, what is just, what is moral, what is good. Human beings need an objective standard which is outside of themselves. Charles has to some extent tried to explain how certain actions, love, and these kinds of things may have evolved as through Darwinian evolutionary process. But what he doesn't explain is how that process would make me want to live by that morality. You can explain how the morality evolved. But why should we? Why ought I to follow that morality? So it's not just animal rights. I would say women's rights, human rights. What are they actually grounded in? The West prides itself on human rights, right? That their idea of human rights trump that of the Muslim world. And my response is, you can have more human rights if you want here. What are they actually grounded in? What's their ontological grounding? They have none. It's like using counterfeit cash. So I say, look, you've only got 20 bucks. I've got $1,000. Yeah, but my $1,000 is counterfeit cash. Once it's detected, once people realize it's not real, why would anybody use it? And so the same thing applies to animal rights, human rights, women rights in the West. Just a few quick hadiths that I just wanted to share on that. Hadiths are sayings of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. The Prophet said, all creatures will settle the scores between them, even the hornless animal with the horned one, and even one ant with another. Right? Abu Dharr, disciple of the Prophet, said, do you know what these two animals are fighting over? And the Prophet Muhammad said, Allah knows and He will judge between them. The Prophet also said, last one, whoever kills a sparrow, or anything bigger than that without a just cause, Allah will hold them accountable on the day of judgment. Allah will hold them accountable on the day of judgment. So if morality is and human rights is just grounded on our opinion, then who are we to condemn anyone else's opinion? Who are we to condemn the Chinese when, not all of them, but the ones who beat dogs to death with a bat and then eat them? Who are we to condemn them? Who are we to condemn China's one-child policy when they had it? When the Chinese are now, and you alluded to the fact that they are enforcing atheism by the sword. Atheism is being forced on people in China. When they cut up a Chinese Muslim prisoner in the jail who's on death row, while he's still alive, to remove his organs, because they want to harvest the organs while they're fresh, and maybe save four or five other lives by killing this one guy, who are we to condemn China's atheistic utilitarian morality? So the lack of an objective morality, which includes the question of animal rights, it might not bother you, it bothers me. I hope it bothers other people here.
Yeah, morality, again, the question doesn't bother me because I do have answers for it. My wife is also not a baby-making machine. Love, evolution created love through random mutation, and it was naturally selected because it helped to create more babies. Now, that language is always charged. It sounds like it had an intent. It didn't. It doesn't need it. It's a blind process. And the fact that it has given us also romantic love does not mean that it didn't come from that. There are things that emergent properties that can come along. I have no problems. I can't really explain at the moment my moral basis other than to say, yes, you're right. We do need a standard. We need a standard that we agree on. That's all. And that's all Islam has, is a standard that they agree on. And you're saying that it's a law. But you're still all just agreeing on it. So you've agreed. And once you have an agreed-upon goal or an agreed-upon standard, you can make objective statements about whether some action will achieve that goal or that standard better than another. So there are reasons why it doesn't bother me, and a very strong part of it has to be an understanding that we did evolve. And I don't know how to express this properly, but my world, the reality that I live in, is not different from the reality you live in. The history of my world is the history of your world. And I don't need a God to explain it. And it looks identical to one that has. So I just wanted to push back a bit on the morality issue. But go ahead, next question.
Next question is for Charles. It says, is there a rational scientific explanation that explains the beginning, continued, and end of the heartbeat?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Yes. Is there something that explains the life and the heart? Yes.
The heartbeat, I guess.
The heart
when the heart is beating.
Yes. I can't give you the exact explanation, but yes, there is. There's a reason why it evolved. And there's a reason, or rather, there's an explanation for how it evolved, or how it could have likely evolved. And there's a reason why it stops. Because it wears out. Because our bodies Natural selection only cares about getting you to the age where you reproduce. And once you hit the age where you no longer reproduce, natural selection cannot apply. Because it only cares about what gets passed on to the next generation. So if you have a gene that kicks in when you're 75, you haven't had babies for a while. That gene exists in the babies that you already have. So it's going to continue to exist. It doesn't get selected out because it doesn't kick in early enough. That's why we have so many old age diseases. I don't know if that answered it. I apologize.
I believe the next one is for child as well. It says...
it's to be expected.
It says...
If random chance, eh?
It says, if you're an atheist, what's the meaning in your life?
Meaning in my life...
Yeah, what purpose do you have?
What purpose do I have? The purpose of my life is to create a place where people can feel safe, accepted, and worthy simply by being themselves. The reason that is the purpose in my life is because I didn't have that when I was a child. My purpose is my responsibility. It is my responsibility to choose what the purpose of my life is. And I cannot abdicate that responsibility to a God. I would suggest that Muslims themselves have chosen that the purpose of their life is to serve Allah.
Okay, so you already know the questions for. So it says you said you don't believe in a soul, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. A few years ago, we did not have means to measure subatomic particles, but that didn't mean it didn't exist. Doesn't that mean a soul might exist, but we can't measure it?
Absolutely. And once we have evidence for a soul, I will accept it. But until then, there is a universe, an infinity of things that might possibly exist that I'm not going to worry about. I am not saying a soul does not exist. I am saying I am not convinced it does.
Okay. So that's all the questions we have. Thanks for coming tonight, guys.
Well, thank you.
Thanks to Sadat and Charles for coming. And IW is continuing. Come tomorrow. There's a dinner if you're doing. You guys are invited as well.
Oh, sweet.
So thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.